Hey Doc, it's Dave Warner here. It is Friday, January 10th, 2020. I really had to pronounce every word of that because every concept in there is like super foreign. And Friday, it does not feel like Friday. I mean, that last couple of weeks of the year sort of screw with your head in a really nice way, I find. It's like I really like getting decoupled from sort of the usual meaning of every day of the week. And you kind of, I mean, even though I could like do anything I want any particular day because I sort of make it up as I go along, I tend to sort of fit into the same slots that working people do, which is Saturdays and Sundays. I don't mind spending the whole day doing just recreational things. Whereas if it were a weekday, I usually do my work, between 9 a.m. and about 1 or 2 p.m. And then the rest of the day is spent either running errands or exercising, or hopefully both. And then the evenings are hanging out, meeting with people, watching the so-called news. Actually, in the last few days, I watched season 2 of Fargo, the TV show, and I'd only watched it once before. I tried starting with season 1, but I felt like I must have watched that at least twice because I found in just watching the first episode that I could almost anticipate what the actors were going to say. Whereas in, I think I only watched season 2 once, and so I was actually not sure about how certain things were gonna come about. Although there were times for like the really big scenes, I knew that, for example, two of the characters were walking into a place that something very bad would happen in. And I mean, it's Fargo. I mean, it's amazing how good the Fargo TV series is. And so I thought I would just get that out there. At least know in this format, at least one person is going to listen to this. And what I love about this idea, at least, is that, well, for one thing, it's the kind of podcast I'm pretty sure nobody's ever done this one of the kind before. And who knows if it's going to be any good. That's the other thing. I mean, my guess is that it's going to be good because our conversations, Doc, when we get together, are the kinds of things that while we're doing it, I'm thinking, man, it's just like too bad we don't have like a voice recorder going here because I'd love to just go back to this and take notes from what we were, talking about because there's like about 18 different really interesting blog posts in this. And somehow, if we were to do this on a regular basis, I might actually be able to develop an outline for a book. That's kind of what I'm hoping. I really feel a sense of urgency to do the book now, and my programming work has become very rewarding, I have to say, because I've sort of developed a set of priorities. I have a cast of characters, all kinds of software here that is debugged and usable and whatnot. I just don't have users for it, and so I have some rules now. For example, any effort that I put into scripting.com is worth 10 times the effort that I put into some product that like very few people are using, like for example, 1999.io. A very nice piece of software. It's what you use to do doc.blog. But I haven't worked on it in 3 years. If I were to start working on it, it would be excruciating. Another example, and I have to renew this domain every year, is listicle.io. It's a project that I did actually in conjunction with the new release of the Clue Train Manifesto that you and Dave Weinberg were doing. I wanted to have listicle software, basically, that would take an outline the same way we would, because the same way we did with More and turn an outline into a presentation, only today we call them listicles. And I renewed the domain. The software it works every time I've tried to. I mean, I always have to like brush the cobwebs off because I forget how to use this stuff. It's a weird place to be, having been programming. I think you're looking at about 10 years worth of programming here. Maybe not quite that much, but I've been programming JavaScript now for a long time. And funny thing about it, however, and given the content, what you talked about, is that recently, one of the projects I wanted to do, which I had spent, I'd spent about a month, probably a couple of years ago, doing a XML RPC implementation in JavaScript. And so XML RPC is my second most trafficked site after scripting.com. And if you think about it, of course, people still use XML RPC. I don't know, Doc, how much you know about it, but it it's very rational technology. It's been very broadly supported. It's baked into Python, for example. It's baked into the Mac OS, at least it was at one point. I'm not sure if it is anymore. And it really doesn't have any competition. That was the amazing thing. Whereas RSS got all this attention, and it begat Adam, and it was always, you know, contentious. Should we just talk about RSS? Should we talk about RSS and Adam? And then there was the RDF stuff, and there was all this contention about RSS, but there was never really any contention for XML RPC. You know, yes, there was SOAP, but SOAP is like so thoroughly reviled in the tech community that it almost sort of inoculated XML RPC to competition. So I figured, all right, well, this is really cool. I will, you know, have some fun here. And it was a lot harder than I imagined it would be. Because one of the things is that Frontier is, and I was thinking about this the other day, it's like if there is any record left of the work that I've done after it's all said and done, 30 years after I'm, you know, dead, a word that I find hard to say about myself, but, you know, maybe even you're listening to this right now and I'm already dead. It's hopefully maybe somebody is doing that. And I think that if any of the record survives, I think Frontier will be the biggest thing that I created. It is a really magnificent piece of software. And so in advance of what else we use, that it's actually hard to explain in those terms. Programmer, and I know this now, it was only theoretical to me before I made the switch to JavaScript, which I absolutely had to do because there are disadvantages, huge disadvantages to using JavaScript. I don't have the integration, things aren't tied together. In Frontier, debugging something is just second nature. You just start running it and you set a breakpoint and, you know, you don't have to do any special preparation. You're all running in the same development environment, runtime environment. It's all the same piece of software. And whereas in JavaScript, it's getting better, I have to say, but it has such a long way to go. And I imagine people that love JavaScript, which I absolutely do, by the way, love JavaScript, are going to say, well, you know, he just doesn't know how to do it. Well, it's probably true that I don't know how to do it. It's like everything you said in your podcast, Doc. I mean, I am quite technical, but I have very limited patience. Once I get something working, it's very hard to get me to go deeper into it unless there's some absolute need for that. And yeah, I believe that I could remotely debug a JavaScript app, but I've never been able to figure out how to do it. So I have to have it running on my machine in order to be able to debug it. It's kind of like there's this great movie. I can never remember the title. It's a line that Brad Pitt says. He says he works for the mob, Mexican mob. And he says, because the guy's trying to tell him that, I forget who the guy is. It's a very, Matthew McConaughey, I think that's who the other character is. And he's trying to convince Brad Pitt that this whole mess that he's in, where he has all the mob's money, but he can't put his hands on it, it's all just a bunch of coincidences, although he never uses that word. And Brad Pitt very sincerely says to him, yeah, my employers, they believe in coincidences. They've just never seen one. Which, if you stop and think about it, is about as evil as it gets. In other words, fuck off, man. We're going to treat this like it doesn't matter whether it's a coincidence or not. We're going to treat it as if it wasn't a coincidence, and we want our money. And it's like the great ending to the movie Killing Them Softly. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's, you know, it's Brad Pitt again. He's just saying, give me the fucking money and shut the fuck up. Because that's America. He says, America isn't a country. It's a business. Now give me the money. One of the sweetest movie endings. I have a friend, Fafa, who lives in Sardinia, you know, and he's friends with Anna Massera, and that's how I know him. And he and I, that's our theme movie, is, you know, don't make me laugh, because that's what he says about Obama and Jefferson. Anyway, I digress. Okay, I'm almost finished. I had to come back. I keep coming back to projects. I'm talking about XMLRPC. I have to keep coming back to projects, and that's fine. You know, so it might be another. I do the work in 2014, and then I come back to it in 2016, and I put it down. I come back to it in 2018, and by the time I'm at it in 2018, I'm now actually ready to start thinking about releasing it, right? And there's a whole new way to develop, FYI. I mean, you remember how it was in the 80s. I mean, you know, we would start a project and 3 months later, it would be in shrink wrap, documented in the retail stores, you know. We just didn't have time to fuck around because we were burning, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month on advertising and hundreds of thousands of dollars a month on payroll. And, you know, it's just, you don't get to fuck around when you're in that mode. You absolutely have to be directed towards shipping and very good at prioritizing, which I'm starting to get good at. Anyway, so there's a point to this story. I just don't, although I'm really good at digressing, I'm also good at having a stack and knowing how to get back to where I was. At least in a couple of years, my brain, you know, I will have aged enough. I won't be able to do that, but I can still do that. Anyway. So, XMLRPC, we're in the final home stretch of doing the release. Now it's no longer just a piece of software. I've developed the tools, I've tested it, I've refined it 3 different times, which was a good thing to do because each time I did it, I realized that I had left something major out of the implementation that I could do now that I maybe couldn't do before, whatever. It's now ready to go, and the last thing to do is the website. And the website, of course, is a Manila site. And it's in horrible disrepair. I mean, it's just in the worst shape imaginable because I had to move. I had to stop hosting Frontier. And it was not something I got to plan or spend any time doing. It just happened that basically I got myself into a corner where I could no longer run Frontier and on a server. And that meant all the sites that were being served by Frontier had to be converted to static sites that ran out of buckets on Amazon S3. And the XMLRPC, so what I did was I wrote basically a scraper. It's kind of like what you were talking about, is I wrote a little hack that every time a page is referenced on one of the Manila sites, it before it serves up the result, it saves it out to a local file. And so over time, as people access the pages, the folder would fill up with the render versions of those pages. And after, you know, a year of this, like I said, I mean, when I say I have to quit serving Frontier, I mean, I have to do it in a year. It's like, it is quick, but it, you know, it's like, I don't have the, just one person here. I can't dive into, I also don't want to dive into all these restoration projects because I am still an active developer and, you know, how much of my time do I want to spend, you know, like you talk about, carrying around the briefcase with the 18 terabytes worth of crap? You know, my stuff doesn't require 18 terabytes. It doesn't even require a terabyte, really, because they're text files. But boy, are they a pain in the ass. I have to say, every one of them is like a weight around my neck. So okay, now you fast forward to 2019, and I'm doing an evaluation on this because I've got a new website now, and it's not Manila, and because it can't be Manila, and because I can't run Manila on a server that I run. And for other people, Manila is our very most rich early blogging software that we created at Userland. It did a lot more than blogging. It was really a web content management system that could do blogging. And it ran inside of Frontier, and that ran on Mac and Windows. And I just don't run Windows servers. It just don't do it. Used to, don't do it anymore. And certainly don't run Mac servers. There really is almost no such thing as a Mac server. So in part of doing the evaluation, and now I do it much more slowly, and I was really going to love this XMLRPC website, the old version. I came up with 1998.xmlrpc.com, and I said, I'm just going to put the old site here, and I'm going to very carefully redirect URLs to pages that don't exist on the new site, because many of them won't, because, you know, the XMLRPC interface for weblogs.com is of only historic interest because weblogs.com, I don't even think it's really running anymore. I don't know where it is. I sold it somewhere in the dark past to VeriSign, and it's now owned by some other company, big publishing company, and I don't think, I have no idea what they're doing with it, to be honest with you. So that the XMLRPC interface for sure isn't up and running. And so it's of historic interest, and it's perfectly fine that it stay in the old format. There's no need for it to be converted to the new, much more modern, plain Jane, GitHub-like documentation that we have now. You know, it's different style, different times. And this is quite efficient, the way I do it now. I don't have to move it. There's no need to move it. So when I looked it over, I realized, oh my God, there's a lot of pages missing here. And let's do this right. So I dug out Manila. I had an archive copy of it, and I make a long story, not quite as long as it could be. I couldn't get a Manila site to build. And I have all the software. I have Manila. I have a working copy, the OPML editor, which is fine. I have backup copies of Frontier. I mean, I have all the bits, okay? But I couldn't get it to run. I couldn't get it to run. And I tried. Days I put into this. And if you could transport that idea back in time to the heyday of Manila, which would be like, I don't know, 1999, 2000, somewhere in there, and interject that idea that it's now 2019, and Dave's fine, he's healthy, you know, he's got plenty of time, and he fucking can't get a Manila site to build. Let me tell you, Doc, that's a failure of everything that I stand for. And it's humiliating and it's depressing in all the ways that you described. And it's even worse because this is something I planned for. This is something I anticipated. When we were doing Manila, you can ask any of the guys that worked on the project, this was a priority, that we be able to run these things for the indefinite future, because I was so tired of losing stuff. And I said, look, we're not going forward unless we can be pretty confident that we will be able to keep this. And we haven't kept it. I haven't given up yet. It's still on my list of things I want to do, is do a complete fresh build of the XMLRPC website from the Frontier object database that contains it. It should have been easy, and it still should be easy. We should do this work because it will unlock archives of a lot of things that were in the early days of the blogging world. Okay, one more thing I want to say, and I'm already 19 minutes into this, so it's already a long podcast, is that this idea of the back and forth, you know, the Dave and Doc podcast that's just a series of voicemails back and forth, I think it's a really good idea, and I think we should do it. I also think it is, boy, did I hear you. I mean, you know, about you not having a home on the web And I feel that that's another failure. It's something that I should, for all the work that I do, Doc, out of all of that work, the easiest thing in the world would be for you to have a really comfortable home that really fit you perfectly. Because your interests and my interests in terms of how we like to write are actually quite similar. And I've never given you a tool that you didn't love. I mean, I really appreciate that. Users like you, I don't mean that approved of or you were supportive of. I mean that you really did love. And so it should be really easy. And so what I'm hoping to do here, and this is sort of the watchword, the phrase that should go with this, is like we get into a groove. We get into a groove and we repeat it. It's like beating a drum. Boom, boom, boom. You know, how whatever the right period is, maybe there'll be some weeks or months that we don't do any back and forth, but it's the channel is always open, basically. And we, one at a time, try to pick off the easiest problems to solve, and we solve them. So we figure out, okay, I mean, I would love to, for example, give you the tool that I use to write scripting.com. I don't think you should be using 1999.io. On the other hand, I don't want to throw a monkey wrench into the stuff that you have that actually works. This has been the problem. This is like, you know, I say, here, Doc, try this out. You'll love it. And you do. And then you add that to everything else that you're doing. What we really have to do, Doc, is we have to get rid of places. Sorry to say it, but we have to start settling on the one place that you're going to write. And then we have to make sure that that flow is preserved to the best of our ability. And then we use that channel to the extent that we can influence the vendors here. Is we start picking off the low-hanging fruit for those guys, and we really insist that they provide the service. I'll give you one example, and then I'm going to go, because this is getting ridiculous. At the very end of the show notes that I wrote for your podcast, I talk about Amazon S3. And I say, I think it is the most stable and affordable publicly available storage system, period. If it didn't exist, I'd be begging them to create it. And so we're not in awful shape. We're actually in pretty good shape. If you believe that Amazon is a long-lived entity, that Amazon will survive you and me, and you know, it's well-financed, it's run by somebody that's paying attention, it is a technology leader, it's, you know, all the right things that make you believe that S3, and they're not pigs about S3, they're not pigs about anything on AWS. They tend to just lower the prices on a steady basis, even though they don't have competition, which is the most anti-competitive thing you can do. But it's the way businesses should be run, right? If you can now do X for half the price, half the money that you were able to do it last year, maybe you don't reduce the price by half, but you do reduce the price. You do pass the savings along to the customer. Why not? I mean, you know, maybe they'll be able to do some great new things that they weren't able to do before, and you'll have four times the revenue, you know? It's an expansive view of business. And Amazon really is an amazing company that way. However, the thing they do that, and I don't have to beg them for that, but there is something I am begging them for, and I'll just be really clear about what that is. I would like to be able to, you know, it doesn't have to be Amazon, but it really should be Amazon, or it should be a university, or it should be a bank. Or an insurance company, or maybe all of them, put them all together. And what you want is a long-lived financial institution. So what I want to do is endow scripting.com with, say, $10,000 of an endowment, okay? And I'll just put it in an account, and we'll sign a contract. And the contract says, you, the entity I'm dealing with, will make best efforts to make sure that the domain scripting.com remains registered and that the content in this S3 bucket continues to be served at that domain for perpetuity. Maybe 10,000 isn't the right number. Maybe it needs to be more. I doubt it. You know, the cost of running scripting.com and registering it, it's ridiculously low. It's the registration, $15 a year probably. It's probably less, but let's say it's $15. Hey, it's $25 a year, okay? The serving is another $25, $50 a year. Maybe, probably not. So, no. Can you take an investment of $10,000 and generate $100 worth of revenue from that? It's probably a good bet. They'll probably make a lot more than that on it. There's a price. Let's just put it that way. Somewhere in here, there's a price. And part of the service that you're selling is the belief that you will be able to, you know, Lloyd's of London probably would be a good vendor for this. So we can have some fun with this, Doc. You know, we're two old farts and, you know, whatever. We have nothing to lose. Let's have some fun. I guess that's what I'm saying. And if all these ideas disappear, well, at least it's been fun creating them, right? All right, man. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.